Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everyone. This is Paul Hitchcock. Welcome to Wealth Protector TV, our YouTube channel. You may be listening to this on our podcast, Wealth Protector Radio. I'm here with my colleague, Gary Sipos, who is the college cost reduction guru. Gary, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Is it okay to call you guru?
Whatever you want. Maybe coach. How's that sound?
I know you've been called worse.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, hey, thanks for joining me here. This is a really important topic, obviously, for a lot of parents with kids in grammar school, even certainly in high school. College cost is out of control. We all know it. And so what we've been working here for many years on at this firm, and you in particular, Gary, is how to reduce the cost of college. And there's a lot of factors parents just don't even understand. So I'm going to jump into it. And tell us just to start out a little bit about the background of college cost reduction. What does that mean for the way you run the process?
Yeah, sweet. Well, essentially what I do is I meet with families. We ask them a whole bunch of questions. And the first meeting is just trying to figure out, can we have an impact or not? And at the end of the meeting, if we cannot have an impact to significantly reduce their college costs, then we let the clients know, because we don't want to waste their time or anything. And, nor ours. And so we ask a bunch of questions, figure out, but if we can help them, which many times we can, then we let them know that too. And so that's
so
just
our focus here. So our focus here, this is not about college admissions, although we help with that and integrate. This is really about the fact that there's $167 billion or so given away each year in financial aid, and how to go about taking control of that process.
Is that absolutely? Yeah. You hit it on the head on that one, right?
Okay. Yeah. So a couple questions that come up, because I know obviously we do a lot of workshops on this and pack the room with parents who are trying to figure this out. And so for this, I've written down a few questions that always come up that I wanted you to answer. First of all, as for right now, is for parents who are asking, is it too late right now for next year's financial aid process? Is it too late to jump in and try to get help?
For most schools, almost all schools, over 3,000 schools in the United States, our colleges and universities, I should say, in the United States of America, and almost all of them have preferred deadlines that start February 1st. So no, it's now in mid-December, and it is a great time to get your strategies in place before the end of the year, although it is, we're getting down to the wire, but right. it is not too late, not at all. Of course, on the other hand, you could say it's way too late, because I always ask people, they say, when's a good time to meet with you? And then I say, well, when you're, 6 months before you're pregnant is the best time.
Right.
Yeah. So the sooner you meet with somebody like me, the better. So we can get you on the right track. But right now, if your student is a senior, it's not too late. And in fact, even if they're a freshman in college, it's not too late.
So what does that mean when you say February 1st is the preferred deadline or something? What does that mean? That's the like, if you get your stuff in before February 1st, you're in a better position? Or what does that actually mean?
Yeah, what that means is, so each college has a percentage of financial aid they give out, scholarships and grants that they give out. And if you meet their priority financial aid application date, which for most schools begins around February 1st, then you're guaranteed to get the maximum award that you should get. After that date, they can reduce it. So like let's say, for example, you should receive a $20,000 scholarship, they might drop it down to 15 or lower. If you apply after February 1st or after the priority application date, but up to that date, if you get your paperwork in by that date, then they'll give you the full award.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. Yep. Now, here's something that comes up a lot too, is I've heard you talk about in the workshops, one of the biggest mistakes parents can make is not even applying for aid because they think they can't get it. And this applies to you know, the high income earners. So is it true that high income earners are aced out of this completely?
Yeah, right. And that is not true at all. It's a really good question. In fact, I have multiple cases where I have clients making over $1 million a year on their tax returns, and we get financial aid for them. And of course, you know, we have to do a lot of work, and it doesn't work for everybody, but that's why we have the initial consult. And so people come in, you know, we look at their situation, and if something can be done, we'll let them know. And, well, but the worst thing is when somebody just assumes that they're not, you know, I hear all the time that my next door neighbor who makes a little bit less than me, I know, applied for financial aid and didn't get anything. So no way am I going to get aid. That is a mistake if you have that belief.
Interesting. And what is it that I've heard you say about to even get some scholarships or grants, you first have to get rejected from some federal grants or something to even apply for some other grants? What is that about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So what that is, let's say you do fill out the FAFSA and the CSS profile, these forms that figure out what's called your EFC, and that's how they figure out your scholarships and grants. And if you do not qualify for any scholarships and grants, but you fill out those forms, then other scholarships and grants open up. So even if you come in and, you know, and I let you know, it's like, oh, there's no way we're going to be able to get you scholarships and grants. If you fill out those forms anyways, other scholarships and grants do open up. There it is.
Got it. So you just got to jump into the process and apply.
Yes. Yeah. But jump in. But before you jump into the process, meet with somebody that knows what they're doing. Yeah.
Right.
Configures you correctly or configures you optimally, because the rules make no common sense. You know, these are government created statutes that we're working with, and they don't make any common sense at all.
Well, and what you always talk about is that it's really a business. This whole thing of applying to college is they don't really care about you or your child. It's a business. They treat it like a business. So you have to treat it like a business, which goes into what you just said, is before you even jump in, you better understand how the game is played, because if you don't, then you make mistakes and you get sent back in line and a chance to miss out on money. Which gets me into my next question, is what are some of the common mistakes that people make, parents make, in this whole process? What jumps out?
Yeah, well, one of the biggest ones is homes, their home value. So one of the trick questions is, you know, do you own a home? Well, that's pretty easy, yes or no. And the next one is, how much is the remaining balance of your mortgage if you do own a home? So you put that down, you can look that up. But then the third question is the trick question. And the trick question is how much is your house worth? And, you know, and so what most people do is they put the fair market value, and that, you know, that will, how do you say this, not give you the most scholarships and grants if you do that. And then other people will say, well, I'll use my tax roll. And you can't do that. You can't use your tax rate as a appraisal value of your house. But there is there's some very obscure appraisal methodologies that are accepted by the Department of Education that will lower many families' value of their house just by this strange appraisal method that is accepted by the Department of Education. And if you use those appraisal methods, you'll lower the value of your house, and therefore you'll get more scholarships and grants. And that's probably one of the biggest mistakes I see. But there's just a whole bunch of them, just depending on each cases and you know, what we can do with income and what we can do with assets. Another one is 529 plans. They're horrible. They work against you. And so I unwind those things all the time, or UTMAs and UGMAs, or grandparent-owned money can really destroy families. There's all these mistakes I see people do all the time. And if you use common sense and logic, you'll mess up.
Yeah, it's like the 529 plans. It's what, you know, everybody's always had, you know. And I mean, I, you know, you know me, I've got, you know, four kids myself, and got a kid in high school. And so when you start out, it's like, okay, open a 529 plan. And then you learn later, when these colleges and universities and the government are calculating your expected family contribution, which is what you are required to pay, that 529s can hurt you.
And so
you get into situations, or they will hurt you. You get into situations on how to change that so you can lower your expected family contribution.
Right. And so that's one quick example of why I say it's best to meet me, you know, when your child is young as possible. So that way, you never get on that bad train track of a 529. Because 529s are okay until you get to the end of the train track, which is when you get to college, and then they work against you.
Yeah, it's not, a lot of people just aren't told that. Now, what about this other thing I want to ask you about, which I think is fascinating, where some parents, you know, part of your analysis is not only how to reduce the expected family contribution to lower what you have to pay, but also when you are required to pay something, whatever that is the right way to pay for college. And parents can do some really creative and great things that make sense for the family about paying for college in a way that favors them in a tax basis in other ways. What are some of the things that pop in your mind?
Sure. Well, one easy one is, let's say you're a small business owner. You own your own business.
Right.
So what you can do, believe it or not, is you can hire your own kids. And that's, you can, if your child is 6 years of age or older, and let's see, that was Giles Industry, the United States of America versus Giles Industry is the case law. And so you hire your own kid, you pay him at least $5,500 a year. And the reason why I picked $5,500 is a specific reason. That's the amount of money, the maximum amount you can put into a Roth. So you create a Roth for your child. You pay him $5,500 a year through your company. So that goes in at his tax rate, which is zero. And then a Roth, as you know, money grows tax-free. And then you can take it out for college tax-free. So the nice thing about a 529, or the sexy thing they market about a 529, is you put in after-tax money, and then it grows tax-free and comes out tax-free. But with my 529, I'll call it the Gary 529, you put the money in at zero pre-tax, because it's, you know, at your child's tax rate, which is probably zero, and then it grows tax-free and comes out tax-free. So that's like one trick where if you do that, you know, you can pay for college. Just essentially, all the money that comes out of that is tax-free money, tax advantaged.
Interesting. And obviously, the child is legitimately doing something for the business. And I've, again, one of the examples is, you know, kids love social media. And so perhaps they're running the social media, you know, accounts for the business. That seems to be, you know, a big one that really, really kicks in.
Exactly. And there's a few rules, you know, if you go down that path, that we have to make yourself, you know, very strong and, you know, make it audit proof. And we'll, show you those rules that the IRS looks for. You know, it's like have an employment contract, pay them, you know, we show you all those tricks. So that way, if you do get audited, you'll pass the audit crystal clear.
Right. No, great. This is all great stuff. And my takeaway from this is kind of, there's two pillars there. The first pillar is get with someone like Gary, to look at how to reduce your expected family contribution. And then the second pillar is, when you end up having to pay something for college, understand how to pay it in the most tax advantageous way. Is that, what do you think?
There you go. You hit the nail on the head. Perfect.
Great. Gary, thanks so much for being on the show. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.